Welcome to the Risk and Repeat podcast, episode number 213. I'm Rob Wright, Security News Director at TechTarget, and I am here with Senior Security News Writer Alex Kalafi. Alex, welcome.
Thanks, Rob.
How are you doing?
I'm good. I think it is incredible that we first heard about this MOVEit flaw on May 31st, and it feels like we've seen 3 years of data breach disclosures in the 20 days since then.
It's been a lot. It's been a lot. And
more than I can remember of anything. Like, it's, yeah. I don't know if quality of breaches is necessarily on par with some of the big vulnerabilities of the last few years, but quantity at like this soon feels unmatched to anything I remember, at least.
Yeah, and we're going to get into some comparisons, believe it, because there are a few. But
yes,
we are talking about the latest in the MOVEit transfer zero-day attacks. MOVEit transfer is Progress Software's managed file transfer product, as you mentioned. Zero-day vulnerability disclosed last month, and it's not good. It's not good. Mm-hmm. We've discussed it already, but it was exploited by the bad guys, or a bad actor. Maybe it was a single person. We don't know yet. Connected to the Klopp ransomware group, and they've the victims just keep piling up. And Alex, you wrote about the latest with this, so tell us. This is a very notable. Victims came to light. So why don't you walk us through what happened and how your day unfolded late Thursday?
Yeah. So I guess to summarize a little bit more up until this point, pretty much immediately after the vulnerability was disclosed, the critical SQL injection flaw, word of victims started coming out. And then within a few days, we started getting like pretty significant disclosures. The first wave of disclosures were mostly private organizations, primarily based in the UK and Ireland, for whatever reason. You had Zealous, the HR software provider, and maybe some that happened downstream from that. That's sort of up in the air. And then you also had, around the same time, Nova Scotia, Canada, is sort of the first big government compromise we saw as a result of this. I don't know if it was the first, hard to say, but it was like it was the first that stood out to me, at least. And that was the first wave. And even around then, when this happened, maybe 7 or 8 days later, we were like, wow, this is a lot of people. And then a week after, it escalated a second time, and we started hearing about U.S. state governments that were among the victims of the MOVEit transfer breach. Now, that included entities between Illinois, Minnesota, and Missouri are the ones that are coming to mind immediately. Those are the ones that I covered in the story. And then it escalated further last Thursday. It was like Wednesday or Thursday. I think it was maybe Thursday, where InfoSec people on Twitter, researchers, experts, and the like, were like, hey, we're pretty sure federal entities got compromised to some extent. And it was at maybe 4:12 or 4:13 p.m. Eastern that I got an email from CISA being like, hey, in 17 minutes, we're going to hold a press conference and you're invited. And Jen Easterly's going to talk. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I was only able to tell you and our colleague Ariel. I was like, by the way, one, there's a call, and two, I'm already in it because we found out about it 5 minutes ago. And I sat in on it, and I'm glad I did, because sometimes the CISA calls have nothing and sometimes they have something, and this one had something. And the way it played out was, first, you had a written statement that CISA Director Jen Easterly read over like a phone conference call. And during that, she said several U.S. federal agencies suffered intrusions involving this MOVEit transfer vulnerability. They basically said, hey, we're treating it urgently, but it doesn't seem like any critical data was compromised. It was limited to the MOVEit transfer instances. Like, it didn't go further than that. And that CISA was supporting the agencies that were compromised as part of this. They did not attribute it to Clop ransomware or the threat actor that's Clop affiliated that Microsoft identified, Lace Tempest, though they did name drop them and said Clop did not necessarily contact them about having stolen any data. They also said they declined to say how many agencies, what the names of the agencies were, or the type of data or any examples of data that may have been stolen, meaning that all we found out was that there were compromises, and that whether it's downplayed or not, the government did not seem Jen Easterly, during her prepared statement, did not seem the most worried about it at the time. And then a senior CISA official, who I have to refer to that way as part of the sort of journalism reasons, right?
Right.
And they said they basically didn't clarify anything from any of the press members. You've seen these Q&As where people are asking all the questions you have, and they're like, we can't say anything. So it's like, okay.
Yeah. They're like, that's it. No more questions. Okay. I guess we're done here. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that comes against a couple other interesting details. One, I think it was that day, or maybe it was the day before, that Clop started naming victim organizations on its data leak site. And it comes a week or two after Clop said on its data leak site that it was going to delete data tied to government entities, law enforcement, and let's say stuff in that general vein. And who knows if they'll keep their word, but I kind of believe it. And the guess at the time was that they're trying to avoid law enforcement, but that doesn't seem to have strictly worked, because over the weekend, I think it was the DOJ, if I remember right, or whatever arm of the government sort of does cash-based rewards for information that leads to criminals, offered up to $10 million for information leading to Clop shutdown, Clop arrests, takedown, etc. So that's sort of where we're at now in the government-affiliated sense, is that there were agencies that were hit. It doesn't seem like anything big has been taken, or if it is, Director Easterly would have been lying, I guess. But I don't know. I kind of believe her.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's sort of where we're at. So I guess what are your immediate thoughts, Rob?
Well, for one, we should note that yes, the Clop ransomware gang stated very explicitly in that initial sort of claim of responsibility for these attacks that, you know, they had no interest in government data and they weren't going to take it from government or police or whatever. You know, and rest easy. We're not going to do anything with your data. And, you know, I'm more skeptical of that claim than you are. But to support your side of the argument, you know, they didn't list any government agencies, at least not that I'm aware of. I haven't checked the dark web site in the last couple of days, but you know, the initial wave, like you said, that Wednesday, so the day before the CISA briefing, the hastily organized CISA briefing, that's when those victims started to roll out on the leak site. You know, true to their word, Clop said, we're going to start, you know, naming the victims and dumping data. And I think Shell was one of the first ones that they started publishing data for. And so, you know, maybe they really don't have an interest in this stuff. Maybe they really don't care about government data. Maybe they feel like it's a dead end because they know federal agencies and probably state agencies as well, state departments, they're not going to pay. Mm-hmm. And so why bother with them? Because you're not going to make any money off them. So why not just sort of don't hit a hornet's nest and maintain a lower profile? But to your point, doesn't seem like that strategy has worked for them in terms of evading, I guess, more scrutiny or staying under the radar. That has not worked. So on one hand, you look at this and you say, all right, hastily organized CISA press conference, Easterly saying, look, federal agencies were hit, we lost some data, but it wasn't bad and it wasn't this and it wasn't that. I guess I take it as a positive on some level because number one, the CLOP ransomware gang, like I said, already said that they weren't interested in this data. And number two, as far as we know, no one was actually hit with ransomware code. Like there was no deployment of actual ransomware. There's been no reports of organizations being paralyzed with encrypted systems and disruptions and downtime. So this is a little confusing to me because someone, whether it was Lace Tempest or maybe somebody else, got a hold of this zero day, right? They got a hold of a very valuable zero day in a managed file transfer product. And CLOP has done this before. So they get this zero day. Maybe they paid for it. Maybe they found it on their own. Who knows? But they don't maximize their ability to get a ransom payment. They didn't encrypt any systems. They're just taking the data and hoping that the data that they pull from these MFT instances is going to be enough to get some money. And I should note, there are definitely, and I'm not going to name them, but there are definitely organizations that were listed on that CLOP website initially that were taken down a day later or 2 days later or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they weren't taken. And I know I'm a broken record about this. I know I've said this repeatedly, but they weren't taken off that list because there was a glitch in the website. They weren't taken off that list because somebody made a clerical error. Somebody in CLOP's operation made a mistake. They were taken off that list because they paid.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of organizations, I mean, again, it's been a couple days since I checked. Most of them are still on there, it seems like. So, you ask the question, how does this compare to other sort of hacks and campaigns? And listen, this is bad. The number of organizations that have been breached, it's a lot. There's a lot of big names. We don't know specifically what the data is for a lot of those affected organizations, how sensitive it was, et cetera, et cetera. But it doesn't seem like it's on, it's certainly no WannaCry. And I don't even know that it's as bad as a Celion zero day attacks a few years ago, I think, which was also CLOP. It's maybe more comparable to the Fortra Go Anywhere MFT zero day attacks, which were last year. Same type of thing. I don't remember if ransomware was actually used in any of those incidents, or if it was just data theft. I'd have to go back and really take a hard look at that. But so I don't know. This leaves me thinking like, all right, it's bad, but maybe we're kind of missing the forest through the trees here. Maybe there is something to this whole equation about how ransomware groups have had to change up what they do because their actual malware is the detection for that malware has improved greatly, and it just doesn't work for them to steal data and deploy the ransomware code and deploy it in a way that it is pervasive, where it affects the majority or the entirety of a victim's network and really brings it to its knees. Maybe this is a reflection of the tide turning in a way, and I can't believe I'm saying this because I am a pessimist, Alex, and you know this, but the tide is turning in a way that's ultimately positive for us. Because I don't know, 3 years ago, something like this happens. CISA is getting on that call and they're saying, this is really bad. And we've got some networks encrypted and we've got a lot of private entities that have been victimized and we're working through this and hopefully we'll get through it. And hopefully it's not another WannaCry or NotPetya.
If I may just jump in really quickly. So one of the things I forgot to mention about the call is that the tone that Easterly and the senior official were taking was that this was opportunistic. What was going on, the campaign was opportunistic. That was the key word. And they mentioned some private sector estimates that hundreds of organizations have been affected by this, which is which means that what we're seeing is probably the surface, or it's the most prominent organizations, and there's a bunch of companies we haven't heard of.
Right.
But if opportunistic is the word here, the vibe I'm getting with all of the data points put together is that Klopp's Lace, Tempest affiliate, whichever Klopp entity is behind this, whatever, they see that they have this window, probably intelligently, and they're like, let's just hit as many people as we can. Let's see who we can scare. Don't worry about getting deep into the network. Let's just do the quantity over quality angle and see how much money we can get from it. And that's what I think is going on here, where they're finding all these servers. They're saying, oh, this is pretty easy for us to compromise. We know exactly what to do about this. They steal whatever data's on that MoveIt transfer server. And maybe there's some valuable files, but maybe a lot of them aren't. And they're using this to scare organizations, and probably most won't be scared, but maybe 5% of them will, right? Or 10%. And that's going to be a payout for them. So I think what they're trying to do is they see this window of opportunity and they're acting and not taking the route of the like we've been reading about the Reddit hack the last few days. And then the threat actors, they cloned Reddit's intranet login in order to hack them, which is pretty impressive from a technological standpoint. This seems like it's not necessarily that. They're seeing how many people can we extort with the minimum effort per entity we're compromising. And that's my theory based on everything we're hearing.
And I'm glad you brought up Easterly's point about this being opportunistic, because I think, you know, with the information that we have, you're right. Like, I don't think there's any other conclusion to come to. And to your point about it being automated, a number of folks in the InfoSec space, vendors, a couple researchers have talked about how it seems like, this was just something that, you know, maybe this Lace Tempest threat actor was scanning as far back as a year ago or a year ago, you know, April or March or whenever, scanning MoveIt transfer instances, trying to find discoverable internet-facing instances that they could access once this vulnerability was exploited, and automating a way to just grab that data. And that makes sense, because if we're going to take Klopp at its word, and it doesn't have any interest in, you know, extorting federal government agencies or state government agencies or police departments or whatever, well, why'd they breach those organizations? Why did they take that data from those government instances, which I have to assume were, you know, labeled with a .gov URL or some type of state agency name in that instance that made it obvious. But, you know, if it's an automated attack and they're just collecting data from any, you know, MoveIt transfer instance that is vulnerable, then that makes sense. They wouldn't discriminate, that they would just be collecting. And I guess that adds up to the numbers that Easterly was talking about in terms of how many victims are out there. So But again, I think I take this as a positive because, I mean, don't you think like a few years ago, maybe like even during the pandemic, when a couple of these ransomware gangs were just like, we're not going to touch hospitals or anybody connected to healthcare, not during this pandemic. Mm-hmm. Don't you think if somebody got a hold of something like this, they wouldn't just take data? They'd probably be dropping, you know, or doing like a human operated ransomware attack where they're getting into, they're moving laterally, they're getting into the network, they're dropping their encryption code, and they're using that disruption and, you know, the downtime to try to extort more money from the victims. And based on what we know with these attacks, that hasn't happened. So, you know, I can't believe I'm saying this, but like, did Klopp just lose the nerve? Can they not beat the EDR, XDR, threat detection technology that's out there in a lot of places? I honestly don't know the answer, but this to me does not seem like an optimal way to use a zero day of this importance to like it, depending again, who knows, the threat actor could have found this his or herself. Maybe they didn't pay for it. Maybe they didn't pay a zero day broker for it. Whoever did find this seems to be pretty good because, you know, like I said, Klopp also exploited the Acelion and the Fortra Go Anywhere bugs. So, but it just doesn't seem like you said, they cast a big net, but it seems like they're only getting a very small percentage of victims who are playing ball. And that just doesn't seem like a big return for something this big, a zero day managed file transfer exploit. I don't know. Maybe I'm underestimating how much money they're making. It's hard to tell just how many victims have dropped off that list. I know some folks in the research community are keeping count, but it just doesn't seem like that many. So I don't know. I take it as a positive.
Yeah. I think that another thing we've kind of learned over all these breaches and covering all these threat actors is that threat actor MOs are complicated and sometimes flimsy and sometimes hastily created by a 20-year-old.
Yeah.
Right. And that could have maybe this was a sophisticated plan and they're like, we actually think the quantity angle is the right play for this.
Yeah.
Maybe it's a kid who's like, let's just hit everyone we can. Let's get money. Let's hit everyone we can. Who knows? Right. And the net point here is like, I have no idea, right? That's really where I end up, is it could be anything, but I do think it's interesting. And I wonder if Chainalysis, if Chainalysis down the line would be able to do a report that says, here's how successful this was.
Yeah.
For them.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, just to see, you know, hey, we've tracked the addresses connected to this group, like a lot of organizations have done, you know, not just Chainalysis, but there's a whole industry now for that stuff. Exactly. And they've tracked Conti and Lockbit and other groups. So, yeah. I don't know. We should also mention that, you know, you asked me this question last week during the Barracuda discussion.
Yep.
About, you know, when a vulnerability this bad happens, does this, you know, move the needle at all on the software liability question? Software liability, big topic of discussion that came out following the Biden administration's cybersecurity guidance for the future, and just sort of trying to put the onus more on the software developers and software publishers out there for vulnerabilities that are exploited to this level and have negative consequences for the users and customers. And I don't know, what do you think? And before you answer that, I should note, Ariel wrote the story about how, you know, this sequel flaw, you know, it was bad, but it wasn't like, it wasn't glaringly obvious according to the folks she talked to. So sequel injection flaws are always on the list for the OWASP top 10. You know, organizations talk all the time about how you got to test your code, fuzzing, scanning, et cetera, et cetera. You should not have SQL vulnerabilities, but they still persist. They always seem to be out there. So, and I think you added in your story that there was another SQL zero day that Progress divulged. I don't know if it was Wednesday or Thursday, but basically saying, you got to patch this now. Here's another zero day that I think Progress and Huntress, was it? I think it was Huntress, found during, you know, the investigation into the original zero day. So, I don't know. Do you think this moves the needle? Keep in mind, the federal agencies were hit, you know?
I think the only liability that could possibly move the needle at any point at the moment, to the point of someone I ask, Sophos, field CTO, it's Chet Wisniewski.
Yeah.
Wisniewski, who we've been talking to for years, and his title's changed a few times, but we know him. He's a good guy. We talked to him, and I asked him at RSA about this, and he's like, with the way the government is, I don't think anything's gonna pass, and I think that's fair. That, like, given that stuff that starts in the House and succeeds in the House doesn't move to the Senate and the other way around, yada yada yada. Sure. But I do think the only way that liability could possibly move the needle, and I have no idea if it applies to this case, is the Red Ring of Death, consumer advocacy, making sure a company pays out.
Right.
For situations its customers suffer. I think the idea of an executive going to jail over vulnerability, that's never going to happen, of course.
Yeah.
Fines, maybe if there was some gross ignorance, gross incompetence, whatever, at the executive level, that somehow goes beyond what you see regularly, right? And that's the only thing I could imagine on a fine. But so I think liability at this moment, in my, let's say, still fairly novice opinion, is legally enforcing companies to pay out when they screw up on a vulnerability, which may already be grounds for a civil suit,
right,
like a class action, and may already be the standard for vendors anyways.
Yeah.
So I think as more of these happen, I'm like, okay, maybe someone could be liable, but what actually could happen at the end of the day? And I'm hard pressed to think anything of substance actually could.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you just to circle back on the Barracuda thing, like, I think you make a good point. Like, if they had not stepped forward, if the company had not stepped forward and said, we are going to cover the cost of replacement ESG devices,
which they did to their credit,
I was skeptical, but they did. Then, yeah, I think your Red Ring of Death comparison is apt. I mean, they would, I'm guessing somebody would compel them to step up and make customers whole. In this case, I just don't think that there's, even though this is one of three now SQL injection vulnerabilities that have been disclosed recently for MOVEit Transfer specifically, and two of them being a zero day, and one of them being obviously the one that kicked off all of these attacks. I don't think that's enough, because the outcome, and I do think this is outcome-based, I think the software liability discussion is outcome-based. If there was another Colonial Pipeline or something like that, then yeah, there's going to be discussions on Capitol Hill about why did this product have another one of these types of vulnerabilities? And do they have a track record of these types of vulnerabilities? And what are their practices? Do they have bug bounties? Do they do this? Do they do that? And that company would go under the lights. But the outcome here is not a gas crisis. It's not a shutdown of a major pipeline. It's not a campaign of disruption and downtime affecting, you know, dozens or maybe hundreds of organizations. It's not. It's data theft. Mm-hmm. And it's bad, but I think we've become so jaded to data breaches and data theft that, I don't know, like I said, it just doesn't seem like this is as nearly as bad as what it could have been. And if that's the case, then it's not going to move the needle at all, rightly or wrongly, for the debate. I think if in another situation, if Progress Software had the same vulnerabilities and the same issues going on with SQL injections and the same product, but the bad guys used that product defect or vulnerability, whatever you want to call it, to wreak real pain and catastrophe, and maybe even lead to loss of life, then I think you're talking. Mm-hmm. Then I think it moves the needle. Then I think the legislators are going to coalesce around a common cause. But I think you're right. At this point, it just doesn't seem like there's the will or the agreement about how to move forward with this. So, but yeah, I think it's purely outcome based, results based. And, you know, hopefully we won't see an attack like that or a series of attacks like that have to move the needle, but you know, you never know. Mm-hmm. See, I'm getting pessimistic again, Alex. I was optimistic for a while. Now I'm Johnny pessimism again.
It's okay.
Well, I think that's it for the update on MOVEit Transfer. I think we covered most of the new stuff there is to discuss, but as you said, there's it seems like there's more stuff with this coming every few days. So mm-hmm. we'll obviously be staying on it and may have another discussion about it in the near future. Who knows? But Alex, thank you for helping to cover this series of events.
Anytime. And for
obviously discussing it with me on the podcast as well. Appreciate
Anytime.
It.
Yeah.
And thank you to the readers and listeners of Tech Target Editorial and the Risk and Repeat podcast. I'm Rob Wright, and we'll see you next time.